Senator Javits, do you believe the criticism over your acceptance of a $15,000 campaign contribution from Nelson Rockefeller has hurt you politically in this race?
No, I do not. On the contrary, I think it's helped me, and I'll tell you why. Because I think it's posed for the people the issue as to whether I'm a politician or a man first. Everybody knew that $15,000 from Nelson Rockefeller, who had contributed to my campaigns for 28 years, isn't going to buy my vote. And it was really quite really quite wrong to make any such implication. But anyhow, be that as it may, that's politics and a campaign. The fact is that I'm a senator. I supported him for president twice. I introduced him to this committee and commended him to the committee, which heard the first evidence respecting his confirmation to be vice president of the United States. And then when these questions came up, I said, and I say again in the most advised way, I'm as free to vote against him as to vote for him. It depends upon how he bears the burden of proof, especially on the Ronan gifts and the Goldberg book. Now, under those circumstances, if I had returned his money, it would have been the kiss of death. His senator, close political associate, well known to have been associated with him that way for such a long period of time, and so I've said and I've submitted it to the people, and they'll decide on Tuesday, that I'm a man first and a politician second. And I really believe that people understand that and will not penalize me for it.
Senator, some people have distinguished between virtue and the image of virtue and insisted that both are absolutely necessary in the theater of the U.S. Senate. Therefore, does it not compromise the issue, the image of virtue, for you to accept a campaign gift from a man whom you will either vote to confirm or not confirm, or you will accept a campaign contribution from a firm like Squibb or Revlon when you will be voting on legislation that could directly affect the profits of those firms?
You don't accept the contribution from any firm and obey the law, and so I have not accepted a contribution from any firm. You're
well, not
about
from
that.
Firms, perhaps, but from executives.
We're talking about individuals who have known me for many years and who are also fathers and husbands and have a right to contribute $1,000, $2,000, or $3,000 to a campaign for a senator they regard as a good one. The question is, what do I do? The same is true about Nelson Rockefeller. 2% of my campaign, and we've raised roughly in the area of $750,000 to $800,000, isn't going to make it or break it. And I still repeat, the people will judge me by what I do and how I do it. It so happens that in the cosmetic business, I happen to be for the Eagleton bill that they're all against. So what? That doesn't inhibit me in any way, shape, or form, and I really think people have more sense than that. Now, when you're talking about virtue in terms of the performance on the job, in terms of your judgment, in terms of how you do what needs to be done as a senator of the United States, you're on much sounder ground. But on this ground, every person in New York, in my judgment, has enough common sense to see the difference as I've made it.
Mrs. Keating, do you see the difference as Senator Javits expresses it?
Well, I find myself again in an opportunity of having to listen to Mr. Javits go on and on about his campaign contributions. I don't feel that this is a basic issue in this campaign. There are people out there who are concerned about how they're going to make their ends meet, how they're going to pay their mortgages, and how they're going to be safe when they step outside their homes. I'm concerned about the thugs out mugging New Yorkers. I'm concerned about the high cost of food, which, as Mr. Javits points out, he knows business. While I would like to wonder, and I do wonder, if Mr. Javits knows business so well, why is business so bad? Both from a small businessman's point of view and a large company's point of view. Any company that stops making a profit is going to go out of business. People are going to be out of work. These are the things that are concerning New York voters, and I urge you here today to bring out the facts that do concern New Yorkers and get off all of this talk about how much, who spends,
well,
and where it comes.
Mrs. Keating,
I guess the number one issue, as everybody has said ad nauseum, is inflation and how to fight it.
Absolutely.
Where are the budget cuts going to come on Barbara Keating's voting list?
I would go to Washington to vote across-the-board cuts. Mr. Javits and Mr.
Across the board cuts, specifically where?
All areas of the federal budget.
In defense as well, Mrs. Keating?
In defense as well, if there's waste there. Mr. Javits and Mr. Clark have proposed that we reduce the defense budget by $10 billion and $25 billion, respectively. Now, yesterday I had the opportunity of viewing a base in Syracuse, New York, which watches our northern coastline and our Canadian border, and I found absolutely no waste in that facility. I'm sure there is parts of the Defense Department that may be wasteful, and if so, then we should move to see that that's corrected. But I'm concerned about the 1,315 federal assistance programs we have in existence today and all the bureaucracies that result from these programs. These are not reaching the poor and the needy in this state or in the United States.
Would you impose wage and price controls to combat inflation?
Absolutely not. Wage and price controls have failed in the past. It's been a fact that controlling the price causes a shortage of that commodity. And in turn, the price goes up as soon as the control is removed. We know that from past experience. Mr. Javits has been in the Senate for 18 years. He now feels that we ought to spend $200,000 to set up a committee to see what inflation is and what it's caused by. That's going to further increase inflation. Inflation is caused by the federal government, since it is the only agency that prints money. It's the only agency that creates inflation. I feel we have to attack it at its creation point in the federal government.
Thank you.
Mr. Clark is a dreamer on this point. I don't think he has even mentioned the federal budget or the fact that
I was about to question, Mr. Clark, would you cut social assistance programs, as I believe Mrs. Keating just suggested, as a means to fight inflation?
No, I wouldn't. I think there's great deprivation in this society today. We're rationing health. We've got enormous unemployment. We need to do something about it. We've got schools that are failing, and I believe in better education. We've got to change our priorities. It's as simple as that. And Mrs. Keating must remember, because she just mentioned it, that I favor a $25 billion cut in the federal budget in the military area. I think that's real. It's not a cut in the personnel, as Senator Javits knows, because he's studied my position papers, and I've had position papers out on all these. $11 billion would come from NATO. And that would not deter the effective capacity of NATO, because Western Europe would have to pick it up as it should. These aren't the 1940s. There's no reason for us to maintain that full cost over there, which is $22 billion in our area. We also have to have tax reform. That's where the big interests are getting away with murder. Look at the oil industry. There's a bill today that would end the oil depletion allowance. It needs to be done. There are 24 senators on it. Senator Jacob Javits is not on it. He's been there all these years. We still have a 22% depletion allowance on oil, which means a $2 billion loophole in our taxes when we're getting $150 million only in new development and exploration from the oil companies, the very purpose for it. In other words, we're paying 10 times more in what we don't get in taxes for what we get in new production.
Mr. Javits, would you end the oil depletion allowance, and would you cut deeper into the defense budget?
I have voted against oil depletion for years. Mr. Clark obviously has not read that record, and I'm still against it. What else is mixed up in this bill that he refers to, I don't happen to know, because he hasn't even identified the bill. But be that as it may, let's get on with the inflation thing. The important thing, which emerges from neither statement, is that the cutting of the budget, which is the objective of which is $6 billion, cut it to $300 billion. I'm a member of the Budget Committee, which is now considered the most important in the Senate because of the great seniority New York has given me. Cut it $6 billion. You don't have to do any of these things. You probably have to cut about $4 to $5 billion out of defense in addition to what we have already cut. We've already cut $5 billion, making a total $10 billion cut, and you can cut that very easily by deferrals of things like the B-1 bomber and the submarine and the nuclear carrier, and that's what I will direct my attention to. But on the basic inflation business, certainly I know business. And that is why, as one senator, I have won some great victories in respect of business, like the reform of private pension plans. And that is why I sponsor bills now to give the United States a food budget so that we determine what we're going to commercially export and what we're going to keep here, and thereby to keep down the cost of food. Secondly, I'm for allocating credit, especially into housing, which is urgently needed today for the American worker and for the American business system. And thirdly, and extremely importantly, we've got to cut gasoline and oil consumption 15%. And we've got to have law to do it, maybe even rationing law, certainly allocation of oil and gas to begin with.
Would you increase the price of a gallon of gas in order to cut?
No, because that's the wrong way to do it. That's not egalitarian. That taxes the poor man, and the rich man will buy it just the same. We have got to cut the consumption by law and by patriotic activity both. President Ford is too little. I wouldn't say he's too late as yet. This is the time, but he's too little on that one. You cannot do it by voluntary activity alone, and it's the single most essential immediate point to deal with the inflation in this country.
Thank you, Senator. Dave.
Mrs. Keating, one of the specific cuts I believe you suggested is in the budget of the Consumer Protection Agency. Yes. There are people who feel that that helps cut down on inflation by riding herd on business.
No, I feel what it will do is create another bureaucracy whose salaries we, the taxpayer, would have to support, while at the same time it would be an organization which would control what we can buy. And I can speak from experience with regard to consumer protection in this state, where I have had to buy a product that costs more. I, the consumer, am going to bear the weight of the cost of an item that has been controlled by a consumer protection agency. And I have had an instance where I would have to pay four times as much for a product simply because the state tells me that it's safer.
But have you not also been protected against products, let's say, clothing that is inflammable for your children by the consumer protection agency?
Well, we certainly have had fire regulations with regard to clothing in this state. I feel we have adequate facilities. What I urge is that we cut out non-essential programs.
And this is one, as far as you're concerned.
Yes, I do. I do believe that. And Mr. Javits just pointed out that he was opposed to the B-1 bomber with regard to defense. Now, yesterday I had opportunity to inquire on that. We have B-52 bombers, which were built during 1956, which are totally outmoded. And I wonder why we cannot replace them, even if we started today. These B-1 bombers would not be ready until another 5 years from now.
Mr. Keating, I must interrupt. Okay, because we're going to have to take a break in just a moment, but one final thought on this inflation matter. On the state level, Mr. Carey says if elected governor, he'd take a 10% cut in salary to set the example. Do we have any volunteers here? Mr. Clark, would you take a cut in salary?
Sure, I think that's easy enough to do, but I think that's not going to do the job. I think we need price and wage control. I have felt that for many months. We have to have the courage to tax excess profits and to roll prices back if
Mr.
we
Javits,
want
to stop inflation. Mr. Javits, would you take a cut in salary?
I would gladly do it myself, but I think it would be doing a very wrong thing, because the worst thing in government today is that you're shutting out gifted people because they can't earn a living at government, and therefore this is regressive. It might save $1 million. And it doesn't mean anything compared to the brains and ability which we urgently need in government.
Mrs. Keating?
I take a cut in salary because I don't have a salary at the moment. I have come out against public financing of campaigns, however, because I feel it's bad enough that we, the taxpayers, have to pay for the salaries of our bureaucrats without having to pay for their campaigns, too.
Thank you. We will pause momentarily on Newsmakers, and then we'll have more questions for the U.S. Senate candidates in just a minute. Question like this seems to do without, and that is this question of a Palestinian state on Israel's border. Do you or do you not want such a state controlled by Palestinians on the borders of Israel?
I think that would be a tragic mistake for humanity and the prospects of world peace. I've always thought that. I don't, however, believe we can run away from the truth, and the truth is that Palestinians exist, that there are 3 million people there, that they need some political unity, and I have proposed and consistently said that Jordan is the proper representative for them, that the Palestinian people in unity with Jordan is the government. I think
but
that's
given
a subsidiary.
The Palestinians themselves have said otherwise at Rabat this past week. Well, what can we do to enforce your point of view?
Well, I reject the idea that the Palestinians themselves have said that, because I don't know that anyone at Rabat was speaking for the Palestinian people. I certainly do not think the PLO does. I think it is an umbrella organization that contains terrorist, violent guerrilla activity, and I think that should be made international crime. And the nations of the free world, and indeed all the world that believe in that, should stop that.
But in dealing with the realities of the Rabat conference, in which virtually every Arab state, for mischievous reasons perhaps, or their own self-interested reasons perhaps, or good reasons perhaps, have made the PLO the bargaining agent.
Well, that's just a grave threat to world peace, in my judgment, and to the future of the Middle East, and the United States has to stand firm and clear with Israel on this issue and oppose PLO as the bargaining agent, as you call it, and suggest and continue to suggest that if there is to be a political representation, I think to make this the lead issue is wrong anyway. I think this is a subsidiary issue. I think we have to build for hope and create economic community and multinational efforts there to address the plight of humanity. But if there is to be political unity and representation in the future there for Palestinian people, it should be Jordan, because Jordan contains a majority of the Palestinian people already, and a majority of the Jordanian people are Palestinians.
Do you believe, Mr. Clark, that Secretary of State Kissinger should be willing to meet with representatives of the PLO in an effort to achieve whatever understandings are possible?
I think that's a mistake, because I don't believe that they represent people. I believe that they have a history of violence, and I don't think we should dignify that. I think we ought to work creatively with the people where they are, and that is in Jordan and in Israel, the Palestinian people, and other areas of the Middle East, and not with those who have lived underground and worked through violence.
Senator, in past days, Mr. Clark has said that you've distorted his record on this question of a Palestinian state.
Well, I think Mr. Clark wishes I had, but I haven't. And the point is this. This is an election. Mr. Clark has no record whatever in the respecting Israel. I haven't seen him quoted. That doesn't mean anything. He may have said some things about it in the past. But this is when we've zeroed in on this very critical subject. And he has really said what he said, and I'm going to read what he said, from his own hand at the very wrong time.
Briefly,
and he's beginning to know it more and more every day. Now the people who don't know him, and certainly not in this regard, have got to pay very serious attention to everything he says. He's running for office. He's not going to confess error, which has now been buttressed by the Arab chiefs at Rabat and a dozen other developments, including the invitation, shameful invitation by the United Nations to Arafat to address it, a terrorist and a confessed killer. Indeed, he brags about it. Now, this is what Mr. Clark said, and it's only four lines, in a position paper on the Middle East issued at the end of September. Quote, the inclusion of Palestinian representatives in any peace discussion, and indeed the eventual creation of a Palestinian state, will be a solid guarantee of Israel's protection against terrorist attack, period. That is why many Israeli leaders and most Israeli intellectuals endorse this approach. One, I'm against the approach. Two, you can put all the Israeli leaders and the Arab and the Israeli intellectuals who support that approach in a very small telephone booth.
Senator Javits, it's easy to say that we shouldn't talk with terrorists. That would mean, of course, not talking to Mr. Bouteflika, who is the current president of the UN, who for many years was a member of a terrorist organization. Aren't the realities of the world that you have to deal with the cards that are dealt to you?
There is a time and there is a place within this context that would only mean to destroy further the standing of King Hussein of Jordan, where there is some hope of an agreement between Israel, Jordan, and Egypt. And the time and the place for talking to Arafat is 100% wrong right now, and that's the job of senators and secretaries of state, to know when not to do something as well as when to do something. And it is that issue of judgment that I have raised in this campaign.
And you're saying that American foreign policy can then change what appeared to come out of the Rabat conference?
American foreign policy, by unwavering support of Israel for the next 6 months to a year, plus breaking the Arab holdup on oil, can decidedly change it.
Yes,
Mrs.
you have
Keating,
said
if we
that
may,
you...
Let us see. I would like to include her in the...
I would like to very much to have an opportunity to...
Well, let me ask you a question then, if I may. Do you believe that there should be a Palestinian state on Israel's border?
Well, I would have to say that Mr. Javits just pointed out that he was not in favor of talking with terrorists, and yet he did go to Cuba to speak with Fidel Castro, and Mr. Clark met with the leaders of North Vietnam. I don't see any difference here. I have always, because of my very firm stand on foreign policy, being backed by a strong military here in the United States, wonder how these two gentlemen propose to cut our defense budget by such excessive amounts and at the same time aid Israel in her plight. I do feel that the Israelis certainly deserve our support. They're a strong, patriotic people, and I stand very much behind them in their opportunity, or at least their fight to maintain an opportunity.
Is that a no, Mrs. Keating,
themselves?
That you don't believe there should be a state controlled by Palestinians?
I don't know that it's a United States problem. I feel we should make available our State Department's opportunities to go there. Mr. Kissinger should go there and do what he can in order to pull the factions together. What is important is the Israeli people are tired of fighting. At the same time, they do realize there are Palestinians who are law-abiding and need a place to live. I think that's something that should be worked out by the people who live in that country, because it is a problem that they're going to have to live with. And so I would urge that the United States make itself available in negotiations. If we can bring peace in the Middle East, we should certainly try to.
With the PLO, if necessary?
If necessary, if that's who we have to talk with.
You would support negotiations
with
the PLO, Ms. Keating, is that right?
Yes, in order to obtain some sort of a condition there where peace can result. I think what is important is that we, as a nation, be able to back our allies around the world and not just pick and choose which of the countries we feel warrants our help.
Senator Javits, you alluded earlier to the fact that the thing that makes the Arab countries politically strong at this time is a three-letter word known as oil. you have suggested that American policy might try to break OPEC, your words. That's the Oil Producers Cooperative. What does that mean? How does one go about breaking OPEC?
I'll tell you exactly what it means. We have to proceed on two fronts. One, by cutting oil consumption in this country 15%, which we can do. We cut it 9% early this year when we were trying to deal with the embargo, with the gas lines at our stations. If we can cut it 15%, we relieve ourselves of the dependence, or practically the complete dependence.
Cut
upon
it out
Middle East
voluntarily,
oil.
Or is there legislation needed here?
I said before, we need laws which will give us allocation power of the oil and gas we have, and if necessary, and I would move for and vote for standby rationing included in the same package. With the United States no longer vulnerable, then you've got a chance. With the United States still vulnerable, you haven't got a chance. And oil and the PLO are now tied closely together. This is the real arrogance of the Arab rulers who feel that they have the world at their mercy. And one last point.
Please, we have less than a minute.
I'll make it 30 seconds.
Okay. Well, no, I'm sorry. Right. Dave, do you want to pursue the same question?
Well, there are four states, Indonesia, Venezuela, Iran, and Nigeria, right, that we can lean on diplomatically, and we must.
Can we flank OPEC in that way?
I think we can, but I think first we're going to have a politics of principle. And twice on this program, Senator Javits has misread my statements. He left out in the same paragraph what I said about absolute necessity of union with Jordan on any Palestinian state. He took the context of my statement in North Vietnam about the people there believing that they have freedom and justice and said, I believe it. Both are false. We can't do that. Yes, we can do something about oil. We have to have a Department of Energy here that will commit the United States to independence, that will work with Nigeria, that will work with Venezuela and other countries.
I am sorry, but our time on this expanded edition of Newsmakers is drawing to a close. Our thanks to the candidates for United States Senate from New York, Democrat Ramsey.
As far as the status, we are all in agreement that our language and our culture are non-negotiable, and that those of us that advocate statehood will always insist that Puerto Rico will have to remain keep its language and its culture, and that nothing would make us change our minds. And we feel that the U.S. has 50 states that speak English. They need one that speaks Spanish. There is something else that Senator Javits has not mentioned, which he was very instrumental to obtain for Puerto Rico, because in his fight to get equality for Puerto Rican in treatment for all, in all federal programs, which he has carried the fight with OEO, where he has been very instrumental to having Puerto Rico participate in the same manner as the states of the Union. Also, there has been something that is extremely important to Puerto Rico now, because in these times of economic difficulty, it will mean anywhere from 400 to 600 million to the people of Puerto Rico, particularly to the poor people of Puerto Rico, to the poor Puerto Ricans, as a food stamp program. The food stamp program was not in effect in Puerto Rico. We only had the food maintenance program. And Senator Javits, when he heard the situation in Puerto Rico, when Congressman Cordova Diaz, then was a representative for Puerto Rico in Congress, came to Senator Javits also to explain this situation to him. He was one of the ones that fought to have Puerto Rico included in the food stamp program, and of course, Herman Badillo was involved, but he also fought for that, definitely. But we must acknowledge also that Cordova Diaz carried the fight. And it's in the congressional records. No, that's why I say he supported. There's no doubt about that. I know. He's not up for re-election now. Okay,
he is.
Oh, he is?
He is.
He doesn't seem to have any trouble, right?
No.
Okay. And the people here. So it is indeed a pleasure for us to be here to support our very, very, very good friend, Senator Javits, and we sincerely hope and we feel confident that he'll make it again. For the good of Puerto Rico.
might say, because I heard the name of my colleague, Congressman DeDio, mentioned that, of course, he has been very, very cooperative and helpful. It's as much his fight as mine. And I wish to say that I have no hesitancy about declaring him a partner, because in everything I do in the South Bronx, which I've kind of made my particular province, as Bobby Kennedy made Bedford-Stuyvesant, I've always included and will always include Herman DeDio as a full associate. Now, I had just one other word to say to the mayor, as long as he mentioned the Spanish language. I, too, have a dream, and I'm very serious about this. I hope I live long enough to see it happen. I would like to see my country a bilingual country. I believe that the model of Europe should not be lost on the United States. And one of the greatest tributes that we could pay to the closeness of the Americas would be a universal knowledge of the Spanish language in the American school system. So I speak a little Spanish myself. I do my utmost to learn as much as I can. But I think it's very, very important, and I've always had that in mind. And I never have believed in catering to ethnic groups. I believe that that's patronizing. I think the only thing any ethnic group wants, and that includes my own parents and kinfolk when they came here, is an even break. And then they'll take care of themselves. Just give us the same chance that America's given everybody else, and we'll do the rest. I want you to know that because it's a fundamental philosophy of my life. Now, I'd like, if we may, for Hank Velez to say a word, who's the president of this Grand Council of the Hispanic Societies. And I wish to say to you, Hank, that one, I'm very grateful for this support, and I'm not a very orthodox politician, Hank, so I'll tell you, I think I deserve it. Not for what I've done, though I think, you know, you're not unmindful of that, but for what I will do and can do, because my relationship to the working people of our country is about the most sacred that I know of in the office that I hold.
I can only repeat what the Senator said. He does deserve the endorsement. That's why we're here to give it to him. He is one of the few politicians that we know that have really shown some concern to the Hispanic community, especially those of us within the civil service system. If we have any success in upward mobility, it is only because of an individual like Senator Javits. If some of our other political leaders would take the interest that Senator Javits has taken to the Hispanic community and those of us within the civil service areas, we would truly show some upward mobilities throughout the whole system. As it is, unfortunately, he's only one, a majority of a one. But eventually, we intend to turn these other people around. But again, it's with great pleasure and pride that we of the Hispanic Society Grand Council and Public Service endorse Senator Jacob Javits for Senator of the United States. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Hank. I greatly appreciate it. I just one other word before we end, though I'll be happy to answer any questions anyone has. I wanted to say a word to Dr. Pupo and to those whom he speaks for, to thank him especially for his act of faith in going on this committee. I realize that the trip I took to Cuba recently was not uncontroversial. But it's characteristic of what I believe it means to be a United States Senator. You're supposed to do your job. That's the first consideration. And the matter of going down there started last April, Doctor, when a motion was made in the Foreign Relations Committee, of which I'm one of the senior members, to repeal the Cuba resolution, which meant the embargo, etc. I disagreed with that. And my motion was to review the Cuba policy. A very, very different thing, because when you review, you might say yes, you might say no. And so I was stuck with it. When my colleague, Senator Pell, then insisted on going down to see the situation on the ground, I could not allow one point of view to see the situation. I had to go too. And it turned out to be, though vexatious, coming at a very bad time. It took months to arrange. And by the way, all this nonsense about the approval of the disapproval of the State Department is untrue, as Dr. Kissinger has since evidenced by issuing a statement saying that it was very useful to the United States. And it was, and I'll explain why. What had to be, in the first place, we weren't negotiators, and we made that very clear. But what had to be made very clear to the regime down there, and I'm fully acquainted with the fact that it's a very hard-fisted communist operation, sparing nobody, guilty of much bloodshed and so on. I'm no child. I have been captivated by Premier Castro. I understand him only too well and what he wants. So the important thing down there was to make it clear that if anything was to be done to better relations with Cuba, there's a lot he had to do, and indeed very little we have to do. And among the things that he has to do, and because we have a deep and burning interest which will persist, is humanity to the political prisoners. We saw political prisoners. I'm not going to give you the nonsense about the fact that, you know, they looked well fed and all that childishness. Of course, they wouldn't show us anybody else. But it was the terms that were so devastatingly tragic that not one of them had served less than 12 years, and the terms were 30. So I made that crystal clear. Secondly, that the reuniting of families was critical. This is quite apart from American prisons, which goes without saying that we would demand their release, all of them.